Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Canto 1, Chapter 5, Text 26. Tatranvaham Krishna Katak Pragayatam Anugrahina Srinavam Manoharaha Takshradayame Nupadam Vishrinvata Priyashravasyanga Mama Bhavad Uchihi. Tatra. Thereupon,
Anu,
every day,
I, Krishna Kataha,
narration of Lord Krishna's activities, Pragayatam, describing. Anugrahina
by causeless mercy.
Ashrinavam,
giving all reception.
Manat-haraha, attractive.
Those.
Shraddhaya,
respectfully,
may unto me,
Anupadam,
every step.
Vishrinvataha,
hearing attentively, Priyashravasi,
of the personality of Godhead.
Amma.
O Vyasadeva.
Mama.
Mine.
Abhavat.
It so became.
Ruchihi.
Taste.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O Vyasadeva, in that association, and by the mercy of those great Vedantists, I could hear them describe the attractive activities of Lord Krishna, and thus listening attentively, my taste for hearing of the personality of God had increased at every step. Purport. Lord Sri Krishna, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, is attractive not only in his personal features, but also in his transcendental activities. It is so because the Absolute is absolute by his name, fame, form, pastimes, antaraj, paraphernalia, etc. The Lord descends on this material world out of his causeless mercy and displays his various transcendental pastimes as a human being, so that human beings attracted toward him become able to go back to Godhead. Men are naturally apt to hear histories and narrations of various personalities performing mundane activities, without knowing that by such association, one simply wastes valuable time and also becomes addicted to the three qualities of mundane nature. Instead of wasting time, one can get spiritual success by turning his attention to the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. By hearing the narration of the pastimes of the Lord, one contacts directly the personality of Godhead. And as explained before, by hearing about the personality of Godhead from within, all accumulated sins of the mundane creature are cleared. Thus, being cleared of all sins, the hearer gradually becomes liberated from mundane association and becomes attracted to the features of the Lord. Narada Muni has just explained this by his personal experience. The whole idea is that simply by hearing about the Lord's pastimes, one can become one of the associates of the Lord. Narada Muni has eternal life. Unlimited knowledge, an unfathomed bliss, and he can travel all over the material and spiritual world without restriction. One can attain to the highest perfection of life simply by attentive hearing of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord from the right sources, as Sri Narada heard them from the pure devotees, Bhakti Vedantas, in his previous life. This process of hearing in the association of the devotees is especially recommended in this age of quarrel, Kali. So I think we were mentioning last time something from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Madhurya Kadambini, a book in which he describes the various stages, systematically describes the different stages of progress in the practice of devotional service. This is of interest to us, because that's what we're trying to do, is practice devotional service. And hopefully we're trying to make progress in that practice. And we may be interested to know what kind of progress we're supposed to be making, and maybe why we're not making as much progress as we'd like to. These things, this information is available in that book, Madhurya Kadambini. So he discusses different levels of, actually, obstacles that a neophyte devotee experiences because his determination is weak. He hasn't achieved nishtha. The reason why he hasn't achieved nishtha is that he still has contamination in his heart and his behavior. So his faith is not perfectly strong. He has strong, weak faith, weak determination, various degrees of weakness. So he may go through a struggle, and it may be on different levels. And Jiva Goswami describes six different levels of gradual elevation to strong conviction. So the first one is called Utsaha Mayi, full of enthusiasm. That's the typical description of a beginner, raw beginner. He thinks, the newest devotee thinks he's a pure devotee. You know, they, as good as anybody. Utsaha Mayi, full of enthusiasm. So there's beginner's enthusiasm. That no problem. I'll perfect this devotional service in a few weeks, and everyone will be proud of me. It's like, and he gives the example, like a young boy who's beginning to study grammar or some other difficult subject. And he's thinking, this is easy. I'll become a great pundit and everyone will worship me. I'll just very quickly master all these books. That's beginner's enthusiasm. Unfortunately, then he faces reality. There are obstacles to his enthusiasm. He's got still lust, envy, and greed in his heart. He's got to rectify his behavior. Other obstacles. He's not Superman. He can't do everything he wants to do. So the second stage comes, which Vishnu calls Gona Tavala. Gona Tavala. Thick and thin. He's feeling enthusiastic sometimes, and other times he gets frustrated and doesn't feel any enthusiasm at all. Back and forth. Thick and thin. Like the boy who, after trying to study that subject, grammar or whatever it was, for several weeks, he realized it's not so easy. And so sometimes he's still feeling enthusiastic, and other times he's thinking, I'll never learn this. Let me just give up. Actually, we do have to get beyond that raw beginner stage of childish enthusiasm, unrealistic enthusiasm. Otherwise, we will be frustrated and we may give up. We have to become mature and understand that to become perfect, to achieve real perfection, the perfection of Krishna consciousness, may take, or will most likely take some time and some struggle, some serious endeavor. It won't happen easy and it won't happen overnight. We see this even in the example of Narada. He's a Nitya Siddha associate of the Lord. He's already perfect to start with. He never was in Maya. It's just Krishna's arrangement, his pastimes, that Narada seemed to fall down, to be cursed, and that he took birth in a low family. But actually he's an eternal associate of the Lord, and this is just part of Krishna's pastimes. Still, we see in the history of Narada that he had to gradually recover his Krishna consciousness. At least that's the external appearance. He had to go through stages. Gradual development. If even a perfect soul like Narada has to practice Krishna consciousness gradually, maybe it only took him a few weeks and not decades. But still, it took some time and he had to go one step at a time. So we should naturally expect that if that's the case for Narada, it certainly will be the case for us, that we have to expect to do it one step at a time. And that it could take some years to go through all these steps. And in this history of Narada, that he's speaking himself now to Vyasadeva, his autobiography in effect. The thing is, when someone else tells the history, the life story of someone, there may be some distortion. Especially when it's a great soul that you revere. There's such a phenomenon called hagiography. When you're telling the life of some saint, you exaggerate. You know, you don't give all the facts straight, you make things sound better than they actually were. Because you consider the person a saint. If it's your guru, you're going to say everything good about him and maybe exaggerate a little bit sometimes. Unless you're very honest. But if you're very enthusiastic, you may give it a somewhat distorted view. So someone else telling Narada's biography, maybe he may be too enthusiastic. But Narada is giving his own frank autobiography here. He's giving, you know, all sides of the story, the good and the bad. Now, he didn't leave out the part about taking birth as the son of a Shudra. He didn't leave out the part about being cursed by his seniors. You know, all his whole story, uncensored, because it's coming out of his own mouth, and he has no reason to go out of his way to glorify himself. He's not interested in that. He wants to show Vyasadeva the power of devotional service. Not the greatness of Narada Muni, but the greatness of Krishna and his devotional service. And how, especially I think Narada's point here, why he's telling all this, because he was giving Narada instructions that you should write the Bhagavatam. What does this have to do with writing the Bhagavatam? Hearing this life history of Narada. The digression into the history, into the story, should have some connection with what Narada was talking about in the first place. He's instructing or advising Vyasadeva that his work is not finished. He's feeling dissatisfied because he hasn't written a book that adequately glorifies the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his great qualities and activities. So the point must be, therefore, in this whole self-history, autobiographical account, the point must be the importance of hearing about Krishna's glories. And that's the verse we're at now, where Narada, having served the Bhaktivedantas, the yogis, he pleased them. They let him take their prasadam, the uchista, off the jutta, off their plates. Then they let him join their bhagavatam classes. They were sitting down and discussing Krishna. And they invited him, or allowed him, to also sit in here. This is actually the whole point. What is accomplished simply by hearing Krishna Katha with some faith? As previously, back in chapter 2, Sutta Goswami said, Shushushom Shradhanasya Vasudeva Katha Ruchihi Sian Mahatsevaya Vipra Punyatirtanishevanat. Qualifications are preliminary qualifications to be able to hear with good effect. Anybody is allowed to come to our Bhagavatam classes. Practically anyone. We can, you know, the public, the doors are open to the public in our temples. Some people, a few people, we may not be able to allow in. You see, there are metal detectors at the gate. So if someone's, you know, coming in with you know, weapons or some explosive device, we won't let him in. And maybe if someone is extremely intoxicated, reeking of alcohol, or acting crazy, we won't let him in. There's a limit. You know, someone has to be, he shouldn't come in intoxicated, dirty, very dirty, you know, smelling bad, or carrying a weapon, or like that. Otherwise, anybody can come in here. I was stationed at, or was serving in Berkeley, California, which was a suburb of San Francisco, California, the birthplace of the hippie movement. I was there in 1980, and that was, you know, hippies were gone. Not really, because there were leftover hippies living there still, 35, 40 years old. You know, intoxicated, not very clean, these people, especially the leftover, burned out old hippies. Really degraded people. So this was the town, the neighborhood in which our temple was situated. And of course, these people would like to come to the Sunday feast and get a free meal. But we had one brahmachari who is now Hanuman Preshika Maharaj. Now he's sannyasi. But he was brahmachari then. And he was, his job at the Sunday feast, he was the gatekeeper, the chokidar. He would check, everyone who came in, he would smell them. If they smelled really bad, he would make them take a shower first before coming into the temple. Yeah, otherwise he wouldn't let them in. Yeah, there was limits. But otherwise anybody can come in here. But what benefit you will get if you don't have any faith, if you don't want to hear, then what's the use? I mean, there might be a rule at the Sunday feast, you don't get to eat unless you sit through the class first. You know, but what's the use if you're only sitting through the class because you want to get the free meal? Then you'll just be thinking about what's for dinner. You won't be thinking about what's being spoken about. You have to have some eagerness to hear. If you're not interested, there's not much use in wasting your time sitting there on the floor.
Might as well go sit in a comfortable chair someplace. Go watch television or do something else. There should be interest in hearing. And there should be some sort of faith. You should at least tentatively have the idea that maybe there's something real in this. If you're completely skeptical or critical and unwilling to believe any of it, or even hypothetically accept it, maybe it's correct. Maybe this book, Bhagavatam, is not just complete hogwash. Maybe it's actually speaking some truth. Maybe. Let me see. That's the minimum you have to have, willingness to consider that maybe it's correct. Without that, again, what's the use of wasting your time? It will just go in one ear and out the other. You'll just reject it. So one should be shu in a shodadana. Should be willing to hear, eager to hear, and willing to accept, or at least consider maybe accepting. Then Vasudeva Kataruchi Syakmaham Sevaya. If you can, by hook or crook, get the opportunity to serve the Vaishnavas, either intentionally or even unintentionally, then you can get the taste for hearing. That's what you need, this ruchi. If a man has no appetite, it's hard for him to eat. If he has no appetite at all, then just chewing is an ordeal. Swallowing is the hardest thing to do. Digesting is impossible. If he has no appetite. So you have to have a taste, you have to have an appetite. Otherwise, it's painful to eat. Practically impossible. And it is practically impossible to engage in Krishna Katha if you don't have a taste for it. That taste is acquired primarily by serving the Vaishnavas. We sell these books. One reason is that by giving money for the book, I am donating to the mission of Srila Prabhupada. The money that is collected for the books sold by the BBT, supposedly half of that goes to pay for the books. The other half, well, okay, the temple has to pay the BBT price for the books. So that money that goes to the cost of the book, half of that goes to printing more books. And the other half goes to special projects, particularly the Mayapur Vrindavan projects in India. And then whatever is left over, whatever more additional the temple collects above that minimum price, the temple gets to use for its projects, if there's any extra. So it's going to Srila Prabhupada's mission, directly to the BBT, to Prabhupada's special projects, like the development of Mayapur and Vrindavan, and to the local temple projects. So a person gives that money to buy that book. He's serving the Vaishnavas. It's Agyata Sukriti. He's just thinking, this is an interesting book. Or some devotee approached him in an airport and encouraged him to buy the book. He didn't even know what it was, but he bought it. And he still has it and doesn't know what it is. He just puts it on a shelf and never looks at it. But he gave the money. He has done service to the Vaishnavas. And for that, he can be granted Vasudeva Kataruchi, some taste, some interest in hearing the narrations of Krishna. Most valuable thing in the world. It's said that if you do ordinary charity, you get four times what you gave as a result sometime in your future life. If you give charity to a Brahmin, you get much more. If you give charity to a Vaishnava, you get thousands of times what you invest. But you cannot even calculate if you actually hear the glories of Krishna, what benefit you get. if you get Vasudeva Katha Ruchi as the result of your serving the Vaishnavas, that's not 1,000 times the 500 rupees you gave for the book, for a big book. Or the Gita selling for 120 rupees, whatever. It's not a million times. It's uncalculable. The value of Vasudeva Katha Ruchi cannot be calculated. It's unlimitedly, infinitely infinite multiplication of your investment. Most valuable thing in the world. I think it's Srila Rupa Goswami who says that you should get Krishna's holy name. You should go to the marketplace of the holy name and purchase attraction to the holy name. If you can find it for sale anywhere, you should take it. You know, it's said that Lord Nityananda has opened up the Namhata, the marketplace of the holy name. But what's the price? So Rupa Goswami says, tattva lolyam ekalam mulyam. The only is ekta, you know, fixed price. But the only price is laulyam. You have to have eagerness, greed, to have that holy name. Otherwise you can't buy it. Najanma, and well, how do you get that laulyam, that eagerness? Najanma koti sukriti bhirapi labhyate. You cannot buy or exchange and barter anything for that laulyam, for that eagerness to hear about Krishna, his name and his fame. Even in exchange for all the pious credits you have accumulated for millions, for tens of millions of lifetimes. And you may be a very pious person, you may have a good balance in your karmic account. But you can close your account and still all the assets you have will not buy the eagerness that's required to get the mercy of Krishna's holy name and Vasudeva Katha Ruchi. Its valuable is inestimable. It cannot be compared to the value of all the pious credits that the most pious good worker in the whole universe, after doing Vedic sacrifices, charity, and welfare activities for millions of lifetimes. Even all the good karma he's accumulated is not equal to the potency of Krishna's name and Krishna's fame. And it's the eighth offense, I think, against the holy name. To consider the potency of Krishna's name to be anything comparable to the power of ordinary ritualistic Vedic performances. It's not ordinary punya to hear the glories of Krishna. And what happens to Narada? Just by every day getting the opportunity to hear Krishna Katha. Tatranvaham Krishna Katha Pragayatam. So the yogis, the sannyasis who are staying for the Chaturmasya in the home of the mother of Narada, every day they were chanting, reciting Pragayatam, singing or reciting these Krishna Kathas, these various narrations about the Supreme Lord. Exactly what they were saying isn't specified here, but it was Krishna Katha. By their compassion, anugrahena ashunavam, I got the opportunity to listen. And I could appreciate manohara, that these narrations were very attractive. When one has a taste, then he can understand. To understand ordinary mundane literature, or say scientific literature, doesn't have rasa, doesn't have a taste. It's just information. studying history, memorizing dates, learning chemistry formulas. You know, it doesn't matter what taste you have. You have to have a little taste, otherwise you can't tolerate it. But it's not the taste that is the success, it's the memorization and passing the test. But when it comes to literature, poetry, and transcendental literature and poetry, when it comes to the science of rasa, the taste is everything. The facts, the memorization, is of no importance, relatively speaking. It's the rasa, the ruchi, that's the essence. What you accomplish by hearing Krishna katha is to become attracted to Krishna. Not learn so many interesting facts about him, or so many useful facts that you should know because you're going to be tested on it. You have to pass the test, and then when you graduate and go out in the real world, you have to know these facts. In order to, you know, win friends and influence people, you have to know so many facts about Krishna. And maybe like that in the, you know, superficial world of the Bhagavat reciters and mundane pundits. But among real Vaishnavas, it doesn't matter the facts that you know about Krishna. What matters, are you actually attracted to him? Do you have any love for Krishna? Can you actually taste what rasa is? You know, you may be able to explain scientifically everything about Mahabhava, but do you have any taste for rasa? Any real taste? Do you know what it actually is? You can talk about it very glibly, but have you tasted it? That's what matters. Have you actually tasted attraction to Krishna? Manohara, Narada has. He's already beginning to. He's just a newcomer, a beginner, but he's not exaggerating. He's talking frankly. He's not over, you know, exaggerating the story and making himself look better than he was. So we'll accept this as an honest statement. That when he began hearing the narrations spoken by the sages in their company, he could appreciate how attractive they were. He had this, there was a taste, Atma Ruchi, he developed in the previous verse. He already has some taste. But now, he has a taste for Krishna himself. There is Ruchi and Rati. These are two stages of devotional advancement among the various ones that are identified by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion. They both develop only after one has nishtha, firm conviction. And firm conviction only develops after one has become almost free from contamination. Ruchi is attraction to the process of devotional service. And Rati is attraction to Krishna himself. That's the stage that Narada is now reaching. By hearing regularly every day about Krishna, he becomes actually attracted to him. Prabhupada explains that Krishna is attractive not only in his personal features, but also in his transcendental activities. It is so because the Absolute is absolute by his name, fame, form, pastimes, entourage, paraphernalia, etc. His name and his fame are as attractive as he is in person. Some are fortunate to be there when Krishna is personally present, when he makes his public appearance once in every day of Brahma. And then he has his other avatars, in which, in some other forms, he's personally present to fortunate persons. Some get Krishna's personal audience, and others don't. Krishna appeared only 500 years ago as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we missed it only by 12 generations. Now, we missed the opportunity to see Lord Chaitanya face to face. I'm sorry? Well, I think Prabhupada was the 11th generation, so 12 or 13 generations.
You did not miss Prabhupada.
Oh, no, okay, I mean, it's our problem. But I didn't see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yeah. There was some rumor that there was a man living in Vrindavan that was 700 years old and was there, but I didn't say that. Some rumor that there was somebody alive in Vrindavan that was 700 years old and that he saw Lord Chaitanya. But most people who are alive, most people who remember anybody who was alive when they were a child, none of those people saw Lord Chaitanya. He was here 500 years ago. Yeah. There's probably really nobody alive on the planet 500 years old. Some trees. Yeah, there's some trees in Navadvip and Vrindavan that were there when Lord Chaitanya was there. So we missed that opportunity also. But Prabhupada is making that point that Krishna is absolute. His name and his fame are not different than his personal presence. If we simply hear about him with faith and with interest, with taste, that's just as good. Even if we didn't have the attraction to him, what would be the use of having his personal presence? He could walk in the door and we wouldn't be able to take advantage of it. So Narada, he's becoming Krishna's, he's reinstating himself in his position as Krishna's intimate devotee without, in this lifetime, meeting Krishna. He had a vision later on described in this chapter, a momentary vision of the personality of Godhead, and then the personality of Godhead disappeared from his heart. And he heard a voice in the sky, Antas min janmane bhavan, mama drashtum ihar hasi, avibhakva kashayanam durdarsho am kuyogina. I'm sorry, the voice said, but you're not going to be able to see me again in this life. For those aspiring yogis who haven't been able to completely remove all contamination in their hearts, I'm very hard to see. So you won't see me again, not in this lifetime. And he didn't. Narada did not see the Lord again. And that was just in his heart, what to speak of face to face. In this lifetime, Narada didn't meet Krishna. Although he's supposed to be the eternal associate of Narayana, always visiting Vaikuntha, always at his side. But in this pastime, he does, for the whole lifetime, he doesn't meet Narayana in person. But he achieves his perfection simply by hearing about him. You don't have to meet Narayana to become a recognized perfect devotee of Narayana. You just have to hear about him with faith. The kirtanam, the shravanam, is more potent than being in the personal presence. The same thing with the service of the Vaishnava. The guru is served in two forms, in his vani and his vapur. So the physical service to the guru is vapur seva, bodily service. Much more important than that is serving his instructions. Devotees want to get the nectar and they're hanging around feet of their guru, trying to grab from the dust and hear the nectar and get some blessings. But he kicks them out the door. Get out there. What are you doing? You have service to do. You're supposed to be preaching. And kicks them away. The serious devotees, he doesn't let them hang around. You know, weak devotees who need some, you know, personal attention, okay, he'll tolerate, but the strong devotees, he'll kick them out the door and go back and preach. Of course, he'll keep devotees in association for various purposes, but the general principle is that more important than serving the body of your guru is serving his instructions. You'll get more effect from that, more potent effect. And if the bodily association is not available, You can always serve the instructions. What does Prabhupada say in the beginning of this Bhagavatam? A dedication to Srila Prabhupada Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, my spiritual master, on the 26th annual ceremony of his disappearance day. He lives forever by his divine instructions, and the follower lives with him. The devotee who follows the instructions of his guru is living with his guru. And the devotee who simply physically lives with his guru may not get that same benefit. Because he's also, if the guru said, you live with me, then that he's following the instructions. But if the immature devotee is trying to get the benefit of the physical association, not understanding the importance of actually doing practical service to the word of the guru, of actually hearing. What's the use of being that close to your guru if you're not listening? You know, the benefit is to listen. And we have books, we have recordings. You don't have to be anymore in the physical association, thanks to modern technology. We always had books. Books are now transmitted in electronic form. We've had printing presses for the last 500 years, but books have always been around. In previous ages, books were recorded and transmitted by word of mouth. Modern technology is required because we've become stupid. It wasn't necessary previously. In previous ages, Brahmanas memorized the Vedas. That was, you know, primary education. Nowadays, if you can learn to read a sentence, you know, you can pass the sixth standard. If you can write your name and do a little arithmetic. Back then, elementary education meant to memorize a whole department of the Vedas, thousands of mantras. Memorize them completely, without looking in a book. It was considered aparad before Kali Yuga to learn the Vedas out of a book. You had to learn them by hearing only. You know? Kali Yuga, that standard can't be maintained. People have to look in books to learn things. And they can't even memorize anything. You know, because we become stupid, corrupt, contaminated. So Vani has always been there. Maybe not on CD discs or even in printed form. It was conveyed previously by simple hearing and remembering. Everybody had a read-write disc in his brain. Whatever he heard, he could remember. Not anymore. Therefore, we have to study the same things over and over again. We don't remember. You're not this body. Every lecture Prabhupada gives, it's that same thing over and over again. One devotee left ISKCON, an intelligent devotee, I won't mention his name, and complains, what I didn't like is that Swami Prabhupada was just saying the same thing over and over again. Well, he had to, because we forget it from one day to the next. We're not this body, we're Krishna's servant. You know, we have to hear it a few million times before it finally catches in our brain. We simply, that's all we have to do is be convinced. We are actually Krishna's servants. And all we have to do is be attracted even just to hearing about Krishna. If we hear about Krishna as described by Shukadeva and the other speakers of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have to become attracted to him. And if we become attracted to hearing about Krishna, that is the key to our perfection. There's no way you can avoid becoming Krishna conscious. If you regularly, attentively hear Srimad Bhagavatam, you may not want to become fully Krishna conscious. You may want not to rush it. You may want to enjoy this life for the rest of this lifetime. Then don't listen to Bhagavatam regularly. It will destroy your material plans. Hare Krishna. Okay, so any questions or comments? Rati is the same as Bhava. I'm sorry, Rati is Asapti. Sorry. Asapti. Then Bhava, then Prema, if I'm right. Eight stages. So those are the last stages. Prema is the perfection. The beginning of the awakening of Prema, like the dawn, when the sunlight is just appearing on the horizon, and the sky just turns a little pink, and a little bit of light comes, that is Bhava. Or like a sprout of a plant, just a little sprout poking itself out of the ground. That is Bhava. The beginning of the awakening of Prema. So preliminary to that is becoming actually attracted to Krishna. That is called Asakti, or Rati. Both names are the same thing. And previous to that is becoming strongly attracted to the process of devotional service. That's called Ruchi. That's working backwards from Prema.
This is not the process of devotion. You said
Rati
is
part of, stage of.
Huh?
I said what?
You said Rati is an attraction to Krishna.
Yes, but it's one stage.
Achha.
That is a stage. You know, on the way to Prema. It's two steps back from Prema. Yeah. Well, there. When one is practicing, beginning to practice Bhajan Priya, the actual regulated practice, let's suppose you've taken initiation, or you're preparing to take initiation, and you're actually trying to follow the standard sadhana. This is what you encounter. Up to getting rid of your anarthas. In the beginning stages where you're still full of anarthas, you go through these six levels. I mentioned two of them. Let's say unsteady devotional service. Devotional service in which you're on a level where you're not really convinced, and therefore you have weakness. Yes? Well, according to Guru Goswami's scheme, this is on the second stage of Bhajana Kriya, practicing the worship of Krishna. But you still have contamination. You haven't worked out your contaminations. So then you experience on six different levels various obstacles. So the first two I mentioned, and there are four others. Ganatarala 3 and 4 and 5 and 6. 5 and 6, I think, I don't remember. There's Vishaya Sangara, at war against Maya, war against sense gratification, where you're really struggling, with tendencies to indulge in sense gratification. You know it's wrong to indulge in sense gratification. It's either actually breaking the principles or just doing things that are irrelevant to Krishna consciousness. Just like, it's not a breaking of a regular principle to play the guitar. Okay? But it's Maya if it's not your assigned service to play the guitar. If you're just doing it for entertainment and it's not your service, it's wasting time. It's sense gratification. Not, strictly speaking, a big sin. Not breaking a regular principle, but it's Maya. So that's also sense gratification. So indulging in sense gratification, either just frivolous nonsense, frivolous irrelevant activity, or actual illicit activity against the regular principles, either one, that tendency may still be there in a devotee who's trying to be sincere. So he's fighting the war against Maya, and sometimes Maya's winning. The war against sense gratification, rather. Vishaya Sangara. I think that's the fourth stage. Then there's Niyamakshama. that you make so many plans to follow very strict sadhana. You know, I'm only going to eat a little bit every day. I'm going to chant 64 rounds every day. I'm going to do a parikrama every day. And then you can't do it. You make vows and you can't keep them. You make plans and you can't keep them. That's called niyama akshama. Big plans, but they're more than you can accomplish. And then the last of the six, I think I got five out of six. The last of the six is, what is that called? Enjoying in the waves is the English. Taranga rangini. Where you're enjoying the byproducts of devotional service. You've got name, fame, followers, so much freedom to do whatever you want, money in your pocket, you can fly all over the world, and you're enjoying those things. You know, you're having subtle sense gratification out of from the facilities provided by devotional service. You're enjoying your devotional service in the material life. That's the sixth obstacle, the sixth pitfall. You got to get beyond that too. You know, you get facilities, material facilities, as a byproduct of becoming advanced in devotional service. You got to not become attracted to them. Like the yogis who get mystic cities. So we get the mystic cities of being able to go to America and, have a mobile phone and this and that. Well, now everybody has a mobile phone. A few years ago it was a big thing. You get special facilities because you're practicing devotional service. We have to, like a yogi, not become attracted to these cities, byproducts of our practice. That's five out of six. I can't remember who the third one is. Okay. And they're one after another. You may not have to go through each of the stages, but they're, the first one is the worst. The neophyte stage where you're sure you're going to become perfect in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yes?
With the help of knowledge, if you have knowledge, even in these stages, you have to get some knowledge to keep on practicing the personal devotional service.
Yes.
Even at one of these stages.
Yes.
So does that help to get become more knowledgeable in these six stages?
We want to become knowledgeable about the important things. We want tattva jnana, not trivial jnana, but essential knowledge. A knowledge about who Krishna really is, who we really are, what's our relationship with the Absolute, and how can we practice reviving that. This is essential knowledge that we need. If we know why we're taking all this trouble to practice Krishna consciousness, if we know why, then even when we run into difficulties, we won't give up. But if we're doing it only because it feels good, inevitably there'll come a time when it doesn't feel good, and we'll give up. But on the basis of knowledge, we'll persevere. So it is important to have that knowledge, but the right knowledge, the essential knowledge. Not just a lot of facts and figures to impress other people with. Okay?
Not on the basis of as we like.
Yeah. Not whimsically, yes. Oh, no. I said what I said just now. We shouldn't, if we practice Krishna consciousness only because it feels good, only because it pleases us. I like chanting, I like the prasadam, I like these devotees, but what happens when I, for some reason, I don't feel like chanting, or the prasadam is being cooked by someone and I don't like the way it's being cooked, and the devotees are giving me a hard time, then my reasons are taken away from me for liking it, and I don't have the solid knowledge to know that I should do it anyway, whether it feels good or not. Nothing in the material world always feels good. Nothing. There's always trouble in the material world. for Krishna's devotees also. Yes, please.
Among one of the stages, the fifth stage, you were saying that there's a war against Maya, like you want to fight the tendencies which are there in our heart.
Yeah.
But that also leads to a lack of enthusiasm whenever there's a fight or there's a tendency.
Yes, it's exhausting.
So it's a, like a mix between the second stage and the fifth stage. The second stage is like lack of enthusiasm and suddenly there is an upsurge of enthusiasm.
Well, this is like you've got a steady supply of enthusiasm, but you got limits. You know, a man may be very enthusiastic and brave, but you send him out to the battlefield, to the front. How long can he stay there? For a week? For 2 weeks? Eventually, he becomes shell shock, and you got to take him back and you know let him recover, and send somebody else to the front. You know, to be having cannon shells fall. Right next to you for weeks is too much. So like that, this constant struggle against sense gratification. I'm doing everything I can to serve Krishna and still I'm falling down regularly. It's very frustrating. So we should avoid that. We should, in the beginning, develop good habits. You know, strict sadhana and stay away from getting into a habit of deviating. Krishna will forgive us for our deviations. Deviate. Fall down. Break principles. Krishna could forgive us, but then we're going to suffer later on with that constant struggle against our bad habits. Better get rid of the bad habits in the beginning. Whatever bad habits we might have that are not good for devotional service, get rid of them in the beginning. Because 20 or 30 years later, you'll be just suffering this constant struggle. That's what the stage is. You don't have to go through it. It's just a stage that some go through. Mainly because of not laying a good foundation in the beginning. Not clearing, straightening up your act in the very beginning. Krishna tolerates our imperfections and he lets us continue devotional service, but then we have to be beaten constantly or suffer this constant pressure of Maya, enticing us and sometimes falling down. Yes?
You may become, after 20, 30 years down the line, you may have a certain type of regulation which may not be ideal, but it will keep you a little bit steady.
Yes?
So that way, it's not the best thing.
Yes, but then you're suffering embarrassment, shame, discouragement, because of regular deviations. You know I'm not supposed to do this. It's not the standard. And that's the stage called Vishaya Sangara. You're still struggling with your material tendencies. It's a natural stage. Some devotees have to go through it. And some devotees are stuck on it for years. It's better to avoid it. Better to live a simple devotional life, but a clean one. Without these deviations. Following the regular principles properly makes things very easy. And not following them properly makes things complicated. Yes? Yes? Not necessarily endeavoring to be the best, to accomplish more than everybody else, to aim for more than you can accomplish. Just chant Hare Krishna and avoid these sinful activities and live in the association of devotees. If you can't do anything else, that's enough. You don't have to be a great hero or accomplish anything wonderful that everybody would clap their hands about. It doesn't matter that you're famous or glorified. If you simply follow the basic program, then your life is perfect.
Yeah.
If a devotee is following the program strictly, is following the regular principles, then whatever preaching he does will be potent. And if he doesn't follow the principles, he can make thousands of disciples, and then he can fall down and take all his disciples with him. You know, so better just to follow the program, and even if you only talk to a few people, what you say to them will change their life. It's like Jayananda Prabhu. Yeah. Someone came to the Berkeley Temple and they, you know, were curious about what was going on in that place. And even before they stepped inside the building, they met some devotee who was taking out the garbage. And he asked, out of curiosity, one or two questions, and this garbage man gave him such brilliant answers that he was very impressed. If the garbage man, you know, knows these things, I wonder what the people inside the building know. That was Jayananda, who was taking out the garbage.
Yeah, was temple president of that temple?
He wasn't the president. I don't think he was ever president of any temple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He had responsible service. He never was an officer of any sort. He was most of the time he was working an outside job, or he was doing simple services. But he was a great preacher, you know, the garbage man, taking out the garbage. He wasn't, you know, on the stage in front of thousands of people, but he was a very effective preacher. So if you're pure, then whenever anybody meets you, they're going to want to know about Krishna. And what you tell them is going to convince them. That's effective preaching. When you're convinced, then what you say to others will convince them. And if you're pure, you'll be convinced. And you'll be convincing. Purity is the force. Okay. Anything else? Yeah?
Speaking about the eagerness, what practical approach should a person take with the eagerness? Or you should wait for the eagerness to come to our program?
No, we should practice it. This is just a hearsay story, but it sounds good, that a devotee asked Prabhupada, if I'm not eager, what can I do to become eager? Prabhupada said, just be eager. Just be eager. You know, just do it. Just fake it. Just act eager. That's all. Force yourself. Ignore what your mind is saying and force yourself to enthusiastically serve Krishna. Akamak sarva kamo va. Moksha kama. It doesn't matter that you're free from desires, or you're full of material desires, or you want impersonal liberation, maybe. Anyway, tivena bhakti yogina, you should enthusiastically serve the Supreme Person. Just do it. No matter what your thought or your motivation is. Okay. So we can stop here? Thank you. Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.